welcome to You Missed It! Okay, so today is my film. Today I was showing The Little Prince from 2015, directed by Mark Osborne, who you might know from Kung Fu Panda, the Kung Fu Panda movies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It has quite a star-studded voice cast. You can't always tell. It's actually kind of hard to pick up on. But there's including Jeff Bridges, Rachel McAdams, Paul Rudd, Marianne Cotillard, Benicio Del Toro, James Franco, Ricky Gervais, Paul Giamatti, and a few others than that. The list is quite large. It wasn't financially a bomb. It grossed $97.6 million on a $77.5 million budget. The basic premise of the film, for people who know the original book, it's based on a novel from the 1943 novel by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. I'm going to butcher this one, but Saint-Exupéry.
That's better than I could do it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was the first full animated feature-length adaptation of the novel. There have been adaptations in the past, but it was live action and it was shorter. And there's live stage plays as well. Again, it's a pretty famous novel that it was adapted from. However, this film uses stop motion animation to tell the story of the book, and it's woven in with computer generated animation to tell the story of a young girl who met the aviator from the novel and who is now elderly. So he's now elderly, and he tells her the story of the little prince having met him in the Sahara Desert, and that's the basic premise of the film. That film, I feel, is underrated just because not many people managed to see it. Even though it financially did pretty well, I feel like not a lot of people actually saw it. It was overshadowed by a lot of great animated films of that year. That year saw Inside Out, which pretty much dominated. Mm-hmm. Other movies like Anomalisa, Shaun the Sheep, When Marnie Was There, The Good Dinosaur. That was the year with two Disney Pixar films. Mm-hmm. So I felt like it was overshadowed by that. It didn't even get the Oscar nomination.
Oh, I was about to ask that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no,
so
it didn't.
That's a shame.
Yeah, so it was. It's a film that could have done better in another year, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, if it came out maybe even the next year, it would have done better. So that's my basic thoughts on why I think it's underrated, and I'm interested to hear your opinions. So
yes.
I'll start to my left with you, Alex.
I really like the film. Thank you for choosing it. As an adult, I always have a little bit of apprehension when I sit down to watch an animated film or something that's a little bit more cartoonish and not live action, because I don't know what the themes are going to be. I don't know what they're going to talk about or try to get across. And I seem to find with not only some animated films like this one, but there are other movies in the past, and I can't recall the names of any of them, where the idea of being an adult is to forget being human seems to be common, at least to me. Like, that's what I found with this film. But as the film went on, it told a very interesting story. It's an hour and 46 minutes long. It did not feel like it. It almost felt to me like it was an hour max.
It went by really quickly, but they fit a lot in there.
Absolutely. They fit a lot in there. The dialogue and the story, it flowed really well. I don't know jack about French cinema, but I think there are a few elements with regards to French cinema in there. Obviously, this is for an American audience, but I can't think of it, but there are some things in there that may be distinctly French in culture. And like I said, I'm very hesitant to pinpoint what it might be. Regardless, I loved it. It's a great film. I'm wondering now what other films out there are like this one in terms of animation. And maybe not the cast, but I haven't seen Kung Fu Panda, so maybe I'll go to that next.
I think this is a huge step up from Kung Fu Panda for him. I liked Kung Fu Panda a lot, but it's it's markedly different for sure. And animation style, I think that's why it's so unique, is that I haven't seen a lot else with that animation style, especially where it goes between two different styles of animation in the same film. I haven't seen that. So hard for me to say. Like Mark Osborne, he does mostly animation. I haven't seen all his stuff, so I couldn't tell you. But yeah, he mostly dabbles in animation. He's worked on like SpongeBob SquarePants. Like he worked on the first film and episodes of SpongeBob SquarePants. He's done a lot of animation.
So the good stuff.
He's done the good stuff. Yeah, not the last SpongeBob movie, which is god awful. Yeah, we'll move on to you, Jack.
I think there was three animation styles. There was the CG, there was the stop motion looking, which I thought was really cool. And then there was a little bit of classic 2D when the drawings, you know, some of them will come to life, you know, with the fox and Draw Me a Sheep and all that. So it was really nice blending of everything. And that was the first thing I noticed, was like, this is gorgeous. This is one of the most beautiful animated films I've ever seen, like personally. Not just because I was animated, but I thought how it was framed, how it was structured, how it was shot was so... I got the messaging immediately just based off how it was shot, you know, just like you saw at the beginning, everything is a square, it's all structured, and even the frames, the camera barely moves, it doesn't move at all, it's very locked, centered, very symmetrical everywhere. And the second she goes into his backyard, the camera starts to move, starts to be a little bit more lively, starts to be a little bit more free, and I was like, that's great. And that just kept going throughout the whole movie. But I guess my sum up opinion is that I really loved it. I thought this was great. I did not know where it was going to go. I thought it could have, at times I was like, could it go this dark? Because I thought, oh, is this going to leave? I thought maybe, because I didn't know anything about Little Prince. I did not grow up in this story. I didn't heard of it. I didn't know anything about it. So I didn't know where it was going to go. And at times I thought, is it the Little Prince a metaphor for the old man's son, or is anything like that? Is he dead? You know, all that. But no, it went a completely different direction, and I really dug it. So I'll keep that short and sweet for now, but
I was a little curious actually what you guys would think about like having no knowledge of the book and kind of listening to some of the, because they do use a lot of the dialogue from the book. A lot of it is pulled straight from the book, and it's, you know, it's, if you're not familiar with it, I wonder how you'd take it, or how people, what they people think of it who aren't familiar with it. So I was curious. I wasn't sure how people who aren't familiar would take it. I figure most people who have seen this have probably read the book. Most have, except for obviously maybe some small children in North America. But I feel like most of the adult audience that went to see this, they were like me. They had read the book. It was a part of their childhood or when they were younger. So. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's good to hear. Rylan, what do you think?
All right, where to begin, really? I I'd heard of The Little Prince as a book, and I was familiar with the little motif of the snake hat hybrid thing that appears in the beginning and end of the movie. But yeah, other than that, I knew nothing about this movie. I had no idea what it was about, but I loved it. I'm still, we record this right after we watch it, so I'm still kind of digesting it a little bit, but really, like, it blew me away, the story and the animation and the message and everything. It's about a movie where it's a movie about, you know, kids in an adult world growing up and all that stuff, but they just, the way they present the message, it defies convention. And towards the second half of the movie, it starts to become less about us worrying about our protagonist, you know, losing her humanity and her wonder in the world, because we see that she's companions with this old guy, and he's made it through just fine, and he's teaching her the way. So the second half of the story then evolves into this surprisingly deep emotional and poignant journey to learn about death and grieving and loss and how to cope with that. And like, the protagonist of the story is like a 9-year-old kid, so I mean, it deals with some pretty heavy stuff, but it does it in such a beautiful and meaningful way. I thought the score was really good. Hans Zimmer is always a favorite of mine, so maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I thought the animation was stunning as well. I loved the contrast between the colors and fluidity of the fantasy world and even the old man's backyard, as opposed to like Jack was saying, the squares, the blocks, the structure of the city. I noticed that they did a lot of aerial shots from above of like the buildings and the roads, and it looked a lot like a circuit board. So it kind of, to me, that was kind of like a modern take on how the world treats people like cogs in the machine, and you get more imagery and plot devices related to that later down the road. But you start entering the fantasy world and you see this explosion of just color and visual splendor, and it's amazing. And I loved the 2D 3D combination of the paper stop motion. I thought that was absolutely stunning. Really, I have nothing but good things to say. I think I need to watch more animated movies.
Yeah, no, it's I hear what you're saying, and it's neat to kind of look at it from it's an interesting perspective, looking at it like those aerial shots were really, like, if you look at city planning, it's very structured, it's very block like, and it's interesting to think of it as just one working organism, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of kind of is like that. Zach, what about you?
So you're talking about adaptations. Was Purple Rain perhaps one of those live action?
Go home.
Maybe, yeah. Stage plays.
You know,
there's just gonna be band puns just in every episode,
yeah,
guys.
We you always better have the music connection.
Yeah.
You better just universal language. If that's not your thing.
Universal language. So yeah, Little Prince. I liked it. I don't know if I'm as hot as everybody else is on it, but I do like it. I thought one thing that I really loved, which everybody has kind of already commented on, the advantages of going last, is the animation styles. I thought the animation was really stunning throughout the whole movie,
mm-hmm.
And I also liked the score too quite a bit as well, with the like the Equation song. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
It was
neat.
And
yeah,
stuff, how that kind of tied into like what she was doing, and I always like that kind of stuff. I do think some of the, like, I do like the story and things like that, and kind of how that was told. I do think some of things I've obviously kind of seen a little bit before, mm-hmm. In terms of you know, like kids growing up in an adult world, and, you know, obviously, like, you know, the world being a big, like, machine and things like that, and you being stuck in it. But I don't know, at the same time, though, like, it was kind of really neat kind of how they did it. I think that's really its strength, is the execution of how it tells the story. I thought that was really cool. And
Have you really seen that in a kid's film, though? Those themes in a children's film before? Because this was, for people who've read it as kids, it was very much still a children's film.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like I said, that is pretty cool. The fact that it's, you know, an animated film and things like that. Like, when I was thinking about, like, films like an Education, even, and stuff like that. Yeah. Again, it's like adults and
so
things like
that. Incorporating adult themes in an animated feature.
Right, mm-hmm. which is always cool. I mean, everybody's kind of, you know, nailed a lot of the points and things like that. I just think, in general, for me personally, like, it was the animation and the score that really stood out. I could kind of see, like, some things coming, like, just a little bit,
mm-hmm.
As well. But yeah, I mean, I liked it overall, but yeah, I don't think I was in love with it necessarily.
It was like a solid film for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was just what she was saying about how, like, you were mentioning how you've seen certain things before,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like the whole thing about, you know, mankind being turned into, as you said, cogs in a wheel. That goes,
yeah,
all the way back to, like, Metropolis.
Oh, for sure.
From, like, the 20s.
Yeah.
So I do agree with you on that. Like, yeah, we've seen certain story elements before.
Mm-hmm.
But what I took away from this is that, as it was done as a children's film,
mm-hmm.
but it was done in a way where it wasn't just for children, it was for everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't talk down to its audience.
No, I think, not at all.
Which I think is very commendable, because a lot of films tend to hammer in that message or to dumb it down because kids can understand feelings and emotions. Yeah. But obviously, you can. It's universal. It's both a message for kids and adults.
You know, oh, very much so.
Yeah, everyone can take away something from this.
Actually, the mother character was the one that I was the most surprised of how it turned out. Because other films, you see this archetype character and you hate her. Mm-hmm. She has no sense of redeeming qualities. She'll eventually, you know, she's a little too mean. Mm-hmm. But yet, even though she's very strict, she's very organized to the point of, like, obsessive.
Mm-hmm.
She still has a little bit of humanity in her. Well, she mm-hmm. still has a soul. She's doing this just because she cares about her daughter too much.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it's clouding her overall long-term judgment.
Doing it the wrong way.
The point there is the redeeming factor here is that she honestly thinks that she's doing that what she's doing is the best for her daughter, and that's her motivation. And the starkly contrast later on in the businessman planet that they go to,
mm-hmm.
where their values are clearly not so noble.
But unhappy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it's they weren't trying to make that. I think it was meant to be meant to reflect that all adults. This is a common problem for a lot of adults, right? They always are well-meaning and can be very strict for the kids because they want something better for the kids than what they've had,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you can see that. And adults always think they're right. That was incorporated into that because they think they know best because mm-hmm. they have all the experience. But I think the message of the film was trying to hammer home that they've just forgotten. They've forgotten the things from childhood that mm-hmm. still do matter, that you don't just... that you shouldn't forget when you grow up. And I think that her journey was just remembering that aspect, but not completely abandoning the things she's learned as well. Because mm-hmm. you notice that, you know, she still goes to school, she still does everything, mm-hmm. you know, the things that you need to do, but mm-hmm. she incorporates that imagination, that yeah. childhood element.
The balance.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's finding yeah. that balance. And it is one of those, like, it did delve with the themes of, like, you know, imagination is greater than knowledge and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't forget, you know, your childhood as an adult and all that. So, but yeah, no, it took those very basic, simple themes that, as Zach alluded to, mm-hmm. we've heard a bunch of times, but it was done really, really well
mm-hmm.
and told really well, where I was, again, like, I had no idea where it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
All my guesses went dark. Because I was thinking, like, yeah. oh, she fell off. She's now in this kind of fantasy land now. I think she's, like, in the hospital now.
I thought that for a moment, too. But, I mean, it turned out to be simpler than that, yeah, which is probably just for the best, I think. Because you don't want to... You want to keep your dramatic focus where it's needed. If she, like, she suddenly wakes up in the hospital, suddenly the focus mm-hmm. shifts. And it's like, oh, my God, is she going to be okay? And that the meaning kind of shifts to that, whereas it was her journey while she was unconscious or whatever that matters.
Yeah, I think I'm part to blame for that, though, because, like, before we walked in the door, before I walked in the door, I thought, and I messed it up, a little tired today, but I thought you had said that this movie was, like, really depressing, and I think I mixed that up with, like, maybe a little bit sad.
Yeah.
And I was like, all this movie's supposed to be depressing and stuff like that. And then, so I kind of like set that bar.
Yeah,
and then
it's like,
it's actually kind of different.
Yeah, I was like, because I went completely cold turkey on this mm-hmm. movie, didn't know anything. And the only thing I heard was Zach saying, oh, I heard it's a little depressing at the end. I was like, oh,
well,
okay.
I mean, a lot
that
of
was
elements,
like right there.
The elements, like, that it talks about are depressing, but it leaves us with a message of hope.
Right.
Ultimately.
That's exactly right. It's hopeful at the end of the mm-hmm. day. It's the opposite of being depressing, really. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm going to give it a bit. So you guys keep saying that I've noticed that a lot of, like, these are themes that have been, that you've seen in other films, right? Mm-hmm. And things like that. But these same themes were incorporated in the novel. Mm-hmm. from 1943.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's going back a long time. So mm-hmm. you got to think that this was in a children's book too. Mm-hmm. So it is pretty unique. There's a reason why it stood the test of time. So it is sort of a timeless kind of story in a way, like themes and ones that people keep revisiting, but it it was one of the, like, it is pretty original in the sense that it did this so many decades ago. So this story, it obviously couldn't change that. It had that message since way back in 43. I personally, what I like about how they handled it is obviously they had all the stop motion animation to tell the regular Little Prince story, but the story outside of that felt like that's what you worry about as somebody who grew up reading it or had read it before, is that they're going to kind of mess with the story a little bit. But it was a great parallel. It had the same themes, same message, and they interwove it so perfectly that both worked together. And I think that's what I appreciated the most, or the reason why I liked it so much. So, I guess you have seen these themes a lot, but it's also pulling from something from many years ago, right? From over 50 years ago.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's an interesting thing about the novel, and I had no idea that the novel was from 1940. I had no idea there was a novel, but 1943, and Jack, you had mentioned Metropolis, which was from the 20s. Mm-hmm. People back then had noticed these kinds of qualities and characteristics about their fellow human beings at that time, that the office jobs were coming along, everyone was getting up at a certain time, going to a certain place at a certain time, being in a certain area, doing a certain thing for a certain amount of time, and it all became structured. And for people back then to see that and not only have an opinion on that, I think it's, although it's 2017 now, and yes, we've seen that over and over and over again in stories and films and books in the past, I don't know, 20, 30 years. But back then, for them to not only see that, but say something about it, that it says something interesting about us as a people, maybe in the Western world, or maybe just modern civilization in general, where we have to keep writing stories and coming up with stories where we have to bring up this statement of don't lose your humanity. Don't forget the imagination and the energy you had as a child. We have to keep coming back to that for some reason with all the films and books that have kept bringing this up. I think that's really interesting. And I've not delved into works from philosophers from 2,000 years ago. Maybe they had the same idea. Maybe they would look at their fellow man back then and see similar things. But I haven't read that. So what was the name of the author from 1943?
Oh, Christ.
the butchering of the name.
No, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry.
Okay. So I'd like to know if he read any ancient Greek philosophy or Latin philosophy. Maybe he picked it up from there, or maybe it's just something he himself saw. I don't know. But it's interesting to constantly bring that up, as I said, and I'm constantly bringing up my point of us constantly bringing up that.
Yeah, like even if you look at this, the other big movie that year, Inside Out, it kind of handled that as well. It was about, you know, hanging on to your childhood, because you looked at all the memories of the adults or her losing joy. That was the idea, is you're losing joy and all these other... everything starts to crumble, all these special kids lands, bing bong, right? That whole thing, right? Yeah. It's all about losing your childhood and forgetting things. And it just always comes up. That's always seems to be a theme. People really connected with Inside Out. And I think the reason why we connect with films like this is because we don't really want to lose that childhood fascination, that imagination. Like we all really do want to become, I think at heart, big kids, just grown up versions of our childhood selves, maybe a little more practical and a little more full of knowledge, but at the same time, not forgetting what made childhood so special and what makes life interesting and what makes life fun, not forgetting the fun things in life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why everybody can connect with a story like this and why it keeps coming up.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. And when I was mentioning that we've seen these themes before, that wasn't for me, it wasn't a negative. Mm-hmm. It helped make it more familiar. It helped drew you in because you could all relate to it. We've all had those feelings about the overbearing parent who, like, you know, I've dealt with that. you know, you got to do it like this. I have a plan for you. And it's just kind of like, well, there's only so far you can plan ahead. And, you know, that spoke to me a bit. I don't know. It's just what really struck to me more is just how it was the presentation of it was just, I thought, really executed really well. It helped pull me in a lot more than just say if I was just reading the book or I was just reading the script. It was just, I thought the visuals really added another level to this film. At times it felt very magical. Like, that's the word I keep mm-hmm. going back to. I kept smiling throughout the whole movie. Yeah. And that's how I know I really enjoy a movie that I don't have to go a wave of emotions. I'm just consistently smiling because I'm enjoying every second of this. And that's what I felt throughout this whole movie. It was just like a good, sweet, you know, there was no, for lack of a better, there's no bullshit at all in this movie. And I kind of narrowed down on it. If a movie doesn't have any bullshit, there's no last third act twist. Oh, we have to worry about this now. It kept it, the narrative, the arc, all that smooth throughout the whole thing. It never got complicated. It never got full of itself. It didn't get preachy. It didn't talk down. Mm-hmm. It was just a consistent ride. And I think that was very commendable and it really showed. So,
yeah, I mean, it wasn't afraid to even let you sit there and just take everything in. There were a lot of moments where it just kind of sits and lets there be silence and let you take things in and
those are
and
so look powerful.
At the visuals and let you be with yourself in your own mind. It didn't need to tell you what to feel at all times. So you could just sit there and take it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jack, you and I were talking recently about like films that like hold the audience's hand and stuff. And this one, I love how this one doesn't do that. And it shows you what it wants to show you and it lets you take away from it what you want to.
No, exactly. I am a little bit curious though, because Zach seems to be the one who's the least who enjoyed it the least.
Right.
I'm curious what it is that made it so that you weren't like you didn't enjoy it as much as us. Like if faults you found in it or things that didn't quite.
It's hard to pinpoint. Like, I mean, it might be mostly just one of those films where it's like, oh, I kind of agree like on a lot of the points, except that it's just like everything's just it's just a tad lower. Like it's just kind of like, yeah, I liked it. And
do you think
things like that,
you maybe didn't connect with that the story as much?
I mean, I think everybody connects with it. I don't think you can really say that. I mean, obviously, like I didn't have like a parent necessarily who did that, but I think there is like at least aspects like where parents are like, oh, but I should, you know, make you become a bit of me, like a little bit, you know, like sometimes they go too far. Like this is an extreme example. But you know, at the same time, I find like, you know, you can kind of pinpoint like, oh, some parents want to like push their ideals on you and make you like, you know, do those like, for your life and go through with them, but
basically like living vicariously through your
right,
offspring,
making a clone, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and like I said, that's like an extreme example, but like there's little aspects where it's like, oh, like here, take this little piece of me, like, you know, and duplicate it, and sometimes it just doesn't work. I mean, the fact that, you know, you're your own person, you have a very different personality, and that was the case, you know, of me versus like my mom and stuff like that. So like I can definitely take away a little bit of that. I mean, obviously this was like kind of pushed to a little bit of an extreme. I guess like one thing that might have been cool is like I know like the mom and stuff like that, she's kind of like the one pushing this whole like, oh, you got to follow your life plan and you got to do all this like crazy stuff to like stay in line and be successful in the future and all that. I figured it would have been kind of cool if like almost we got to see kind of her and her world a little bit. And I know that you kind of see it like through other people, how they're like, you know, almost working these mundane jobs and like it's a very, you know, by clockwork and things like that. But it would have been almost kind of cool just for a connection through her as well. Like, oh, she's also like, maybe deep down you can maybe kind of see a little bit of her also just being kind of like, oh my god, like this kind of sucks a little bit. And then like maybe it could like bring up in the end, it could be like kind of a little bit of an arc instead of just suddenly like, oh, you know, okay, I see what's going on, like I need to let my kid live a little bit and stuff like that.
Yeah, I can't be so strict.
Yeah, whereas, like, I think she was kind of, like, almost like that plot point where it's like, oh, you know, I've got to be the one to push that. And at the end, it's like, okay, well, now since she's, you know, changed and things, or that, like, I see what she needs and stuff, it's like, okay. And that's cool. Like, I do like that, but I wish there was maybe a little bit more of an arc to that.
Well, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of like, well, when kids are growing up, basically the adults around them teach them how to be adults, mm-hmm. how to grow up and function and survive in the world. And so it's natural that kids learn from adults, but it's trying to say that adults should learn from kids a little bit as well.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, I get it. And mm-hmm. that's, I mean, yeah, you could have gone into more detail on the mother storyline, I think, but it certainly got its point across at any mm-hmm. rate. Maybe I can see what you mean a little bit, like maybe to yeah. make it more convincing and maybe get us a little bit more emotionally invested in that character, maybe her relationship with her daughter a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But I think I think it said what it needed to say ultimately.
Yeah, I think visually was what I was wrapped up in, of how I was really impressed. Yeah. And just the little details, like I don't know if you guys noticed all the like the plants and stuff like that, how they were like super symmetrical, like they yeah. were like mm-hmm. a perfect circle or a perfect rectangle.
Even the trees were like shaved into rectangles.
And it was like, okay, yeah, like so that really kind of, you make this like world and yeah, it's animated, you can kind of go a little crazy and stuff like mm-hmm. that, but it works. It, you know, matches with the story and
yeah,
and
it represents the structure and order to almost an extreme mm-hmm. degree, to kind of show like what the children of this world are facing. Basically, it's a manifestation of the box that they're forced to grow up in, mm-hmm. basically. And it's, and yeah, how to, basically we're seeing how to break out of it a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of movies too that do like the dual format. I mean, there's not enough of them. Like there's like what, Animatrix was one that did several, and I like that movie, even though some of them are like I didn't quite like that one. I like them for trying it, for being daring.
The only other one that I can think of is, and this is way more obscure, there's like a when The Dark Knight came out,
Batman, I was going to mention
yeah,
that.
The Gotham yeah. Knight one, where they right. had like seven shorts, and each one was, they all had a connective link to each yeah. other, but each short was animated extremely differently.
It was really cool though,
I
right?
like those.
Oh yeah, some it worked was, yeah. and some were like, yeah. But
yeah, exactly,
but,
mixed bag.
But in this scale where I think this one wasn't done really as a gimmick. I think
no.
it was done more or less to serve the story.
Right.
And also just to cool. kind of capture that, the art drawings from the book,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
and to show that, and I think it was a perfect blend. Mm-hmm. I like the whenever they would go to the stop motion looking stuff,
yeah,
like, it looked like it was made like, what's that type of fabric that like
it was like paper mache,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, a little bit, but almost like that thinner material that's all color coded, and you can like put it around, like as I say, you can make different shapes around it, and it just looked really good, like the fox's tail. Every time it kept moving, I was like, "That's so great."
The translucency of it, of like yeah. the paper,
the scarf
and such.
Too. Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah. And the way they did the lighting and the yeah. textures, you could see all the creases and folds and flakes and little worn away patches in the paper. It's just all that detail.
It reminds me of like a Leica thing, right? Like a Leica mm. studio kind of thing, where you just see mm. the tiny details and you could just appreciate it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Like, mm-hmm.
yeah, I. Honestly, it served a purpose in the sense that you had to turn a children's book that is only so long into a full length film, or come up with an idea how you could even make a film from this, right?
Yeah.
And so they obviously had to add to it. There's no way they could just tell the Little Prince's story as good as that story is, or as timeless as that story is. It's still short. It's a kid's book.
Yeah. And we've seen films like that, like where they take a children's book that's only like 8 pages, 12
yeah.
pages, or however long it is, and try making a feature film out of it, and it rarely works.
Yeah, Where mm-hmm. the Wild Things Are.
Well, that's an exception.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah.
That's an exception that's decent, but then there's like all the Dr. Seuss ones as well.
Oh, that's an example of the bottom of the barrel right there.
It's like, oh man.
Here's a Who and all that. Even
Lorax.
Lorax. Even to extent like the Grinch and all that. Like all those ones are kind of like,
They just bloat it with all this unnecessary filler that they think we want to see, but it's not actually related to the original spirit of the book, and has nothing to do with what the author
or
intended.
Or adding like pop culture jokes, or saying lines, or just anything that just is to, as you said, think what the audience was. But this, as with this movie, everything was connected to the movie. Everything felt logical. And when it was funny, it wasn't just because they referenced something. Yeah. It was genuinely funny. Like the old man was, I thought was great. There's some moments where you just like finds a sandwich. He says, "I'm on the floor. I have a sandwich. It's a bologna sandwich. I think it's bologna." And like just little things like that. I was like, that's hilarious. And then my favorite character showed up about halfway through the movie, and that was when the fox became alive.
Yes, he was my favorite too. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, they had like almost like a gimmicky sidekick, but it wasn't quite that. Yeah. But they
he was. Yeah,
he was like the Olaf of this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, or that raccoon from Pocahontas.
Yeah, but he was done in a very. I felt like it was a very. It wasn't over the top. It was very subdued.
Yeah.
It felt like it wasn't trying to hammer home, "Hey, this is her sidekick."
It kind of had it there. It was really just like a little dog. Like he didn't talk or anything. I loved when they were just at the entrance to that building, and he's just like sitting there, and he's like scratching behind his ear with his little stuffed hind leg. It's adorable.
Like
just the little touches like that they think of.
Or when everybody's stomping the feet to get out, and then he just goes to stomp the feet, but he's a doll, so. Yeah.
Little things like that are just like, oh, that's just those little moments just go a long way. And again, as I said, I was smiling throughout those moments. Just those little moments just perks. It's just so nice.
Yeah. For somebody who remembered the story, what I thought was so cool about it and adding to the story is that that's what they did. They didn't just, you know, make up, like you mentioned all those other films. I think about like these other adaptations, The Lorax, all this stuff. They just added a bunch of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, they continued the story. They told something that, like, that story ends like exactly how it did in the film. He loses his body, his you know, his earthly body,
mm-hmm.
and to go be with his rose. That's the end. That's it. You don't know what happens to the little prince. You don't know any. It's not the point. You're supposed to like read into it
mm-hmm.
yourself. So it continued that story, which could have been really bad because they could have just given an ending to something that didn't really need more of an end, like an epilogue to something that didn't need it.
Yeah.
But they kept the spirit, like Rylan was saying, they kept the spirit of the book. So by telling more of the story, they were just extending it. They were just telling the same story and still having the same kind of ending in a way.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like the ending felt the same way because at the end you hear the prince and the old man laughing in the stars, and it just like really summed up the point of the book at the end of the movie, which this is all original content. So I thought that was really cool. And to Zach's point about focusing on the mom, I could see that. I could see how you would want that, and that makes sense. I get that. Like as a reason, I think why they probably didn't was because they were focusing on adapting the book, which is the little prince's story. It's supposed to really focus around the child and childhood and not so much the adult. The adult is supposed to be the one who learns. So I feel like maybe that's why they didn't include something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely, you know, makes sense in that light. I'm just thinking the fact that, like, yeah, there was the book and things like that, but the fact that they're also kind of going outside and they're showing this whole other, you know, story that kind of correlates with it, of, like, the little girl and things like that. I think just for, like a movie, like a cinematic kind of thing, it would have been just a little nice touch. It wouldn't have taken up too much time. You could have had, like,
I don't know,
a little bit,
taken
but
too much time, because I think adding sort of anything like that, because they could have written that in, they could have animated that.
Yeah.
But overall, it comes down to just the pacing of the movie, how it's laid out. And I don't know, I feel like just that little moment she had laying on the bed and seeing her kid just devastated, just gutted. Just the look on her face alone, I think, just was good enough. Because she wasn't doing anything really wrong. Like, she wasn't being abusive. She wasn't being overly mean. She wasn't harmful to her kid. She was just blinded by her kids and, an extension of herself, her own ambitions. And that's it. And I feel like she didn't really have to make a over, I'm going to change everything and all that crap. I feel like it's more or less, I need to just step back and relax a little, smell the roses, you know?
Yeah.
Like, at no point did she seem like a bad mom.
No. And that's what I was actually more drawn to the mother character. I thought she was a lot more original in that sense, where if they had her be this, you know, all these faults, and then she's going to change everything at the end, that's been done many, many, mm-hmm. many times.
Mm-hmm.
But the kid and the mother, they have a great relationship. They only fight really once, and that's just about just conflicting ideas and how they should live. But that's it. They don't hate each other.
They share the same values at the beginning. The kid's all gung-ho about spending the summer studying, getting ready to get into this prestigious school to go be an essential adult later in life. But when she gets when she meets the aviator and is exposed to his world and the story of the little prince, her values begin to change a little bit, and you see that come to a head when her and her mother fight. But I think the mother realizes that, oh, maybe that I was thinking I was helping my child to make her path easier and ultimately make her happy, but this isn't making her happy. So
yeah, I really like that theme too, like the whole idea that everything's essential. They are constantly bringing up everything being essential, and that's like adulthood. Everything has to be essential, and the idea that the inessential is also important and has a place, and that's the whole movie spends the time trying to get that point across. I dug that theme, that like, you know, everything, like, all essential all the time. It was kind of a neat kind of poking fun at, you know, just the way our world works and adults in general. Just everything needs to have some kind of an essential value in order to be worth your time.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, all productivity all the time. Remember when they went into the place where everything was being ground down into paper, like, clips. Yeah. So that was interesting, because anything that's not essential must be made essential. So that was part of that whole theme. And when the little girl first went into the aviator's house, like Ryland said, all the colors were there, as opposed to the lights in their suburbia. Everything was straight. Everything was like a light blue. And you go into the aviator's house, it's messy. He even used the word hoarder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that says something about how filmmakers view interesting characters. Interesting characters are messy. They're all over the place, and you can see that in how they live. But I don't know that they should necessarily keep doing that. Like, why does it always have to be that they're messy and a hoarder?
I feel like interesting characters, they're interesting because they differ from the norm, and because they've established the norm is so, like, structured and so straight-laced in this world, then naturally you're going to have the foil to that.
And I think another thing too, I think there was like a study or something not too long ago that said, like, people who, like, don't clean their room or are kind of messy are actually, like, kind of healthy. Like, they say, like, people who obsess and are, like, kind of neat freaks, they have, like, a problem, or they're, like, not, you know, happy and things like that. So I think that's another thing too. I mean, he was truly, you know, happy, and, like, you know, he had that moment with, like, the little prince and things like that, and he wants to get back to that and everything, but I think that's a part of it as well.
And she kind of learns to get there too, right? Like, I like her her reaction to that was just, the first thing that came to her head was, this is a fire hazard. Which was just like a neat little like, she was in that headspace, and that was where she was at the beginning of the film, right?
That little scene, actually, I thought was a good, almost a slight little good metaphor for how people watch movies nowadays, of her dissecting every tiny thing wrong with the story. And he just says, whoa, just listen to it. Feel it, experience it. And I was like, oh, that's so great. Because everyone loves to nitpick everything.
Yeah, this day and age, more than any.
And so it was a nice change where it's like, no, don't worry about the little and gritty details. As you saw in the movie, like, it doesn't explain, you know, when she falls off the down and she's now all of a sudden sees the fox alive and all that. That's never explained.
No.
Yep. It's just watch this, because it works with the flow of the narrative, works with the flow of the story and what you're trying to tell. You don't need to explain everything because it just becomes, you know, holding your hand, monotonous, and just overplayed. Whereas just looking at it, feeling it, means more than being told about it.
Exactly. And I feel like a lot of the movie is kind of telling us to focus more on the bigger picture. Like, there's that, and then there's there's the whole, like, even the adults in their productive essential business world, they don't really seem to have a plan for anything. They're focused on like their tiny little tasks in their own little microcosm, but in the grand scheme of things, they're not really achieving anything. And like earlier in the movie, when she's planet where you see the businessman for the first time, and he's at his desk, he's counting all the stars and counting all his money and stuff. She's like, "Well, what are you going to do all the money?" And he's like, "Buy more stars." And like, and that's
an endless cycle.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, what does it mean? What does it amount to? There's no bigger picture in mind here. And so it's kind of encouraging us, I think, to step back a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. That was kind of interesting. Yeah. The funny thing was he said, yeah, buy more stars. And then he also said more than you can, anything you can want to do or anything you can imagine. But like, he can't imagine anything. Mm-hmm. Like he's like, I can spend it on whatever, like buying more stars and whatever I want
and stuff.
But what do you want? Like what stuff? Like you clearly only care about the goal of getting money and nothing else. Yeah. Paperclips. Yeah.
Exactly. If money did buy happiness, you wouldn't be miserable crunched behind a desk with counting all your money. You'd be.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it goes back to what you said last week where it's not the, the love of money. Sorry, it's not money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money. And I actually had not heard that till that. I was like, ooh, that's, I like that.
And he was hunched over his desk, looking down at her. What is all around him? It's just piles of paper.
Yeah,
like that's not something to aspire to.
No, exactly. And when he has all the stars, it's like, you know what? And like,
yeah, exactly. And
using
and
it
what
for
else?
Energy. I don't know.
Yeah,
just so that I can make more money. Like
keep the machine going.
Yeah, like the most joy he seemed to get was just making fun of them. I don't know, because that's the only time he laughed, when he was making fun of what he sees as ridiculous. That's the only time you really see him actually enjoying anything.
Someone should have asked him, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because with all that money he has, he could have done whatever he wanted, but he's sitting there punching away at the calculator. There was another thing I wanted to mention about the aviator's house and all this stuff, the fire hazard, everything just sitting around. It's not essential stuff. Like, it's not paper clips, it's not pens, pencils, but it is essential in a different way, because it's a thing. Like, it could be a pen, it could be a doll. It brings up a memory for some people. So it is essential. It's not necessarily productive in an office sense, but it is something to have around because it's part of your home. It's part of you. It gives you a piece of what you had. So it is essential in a way.
I think that's the metaphor of the rose, actually, I think perfectly goes with what you were saying. Because when the little prince is going around with the fox, he comes across this row of roses. He's like, my rose is no different than any other rose. It's like, no, yours is different because it's your rose.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes perfectly what you're saying, how like, something like a water bottle or a pen or something could mean meaningless to us, but to the individual who owns it, it might mean the world to them, because there's all that context, there's all that, you know, emotional attachment you have for certain things. And I think that's one of the things the movie was really trying to get across, was that, you know, you might get, as the businessman, they were laughing at the guy says, no, I'm the little prince and I'm going to do this. That's any guy or any person making fun of you just because you like something and all that. Because, those are for kids, you know, like they're too good for it.
Yeah,
and basically kind of say, no, that's very wrong, kind of wrong-minded and unhealthy mindset, because you're just going to I'm kind of rambling on now, but I was going on what you're saying, and I think the roses were kind of perfectly established that, what you were just saying, so,
I mean, and the room, you know, Tommy Wiseau I mean, the room. The room was his world.
Rose, that's
you are my rose. I mean, that was his rose. Was the room? That was his world.
Speaking of the room, you know, James Franco was the fox. So I mean, he is Tommy in The Disaster Artist.
Yeah, I didn't.
I thought it was Matthew Broderick, to be honest.
Oh wow. That's a lot of fun.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh man, that's so funny.
Yeah, the voice talent was really good too.
Yeah,
actually, the voice talent in the film.
Oh yeah,
actually.
No, it was really solid. There's I can't really find anything that I did not like. You know, there was no, you know, fake fat suit from last week or anything like that. I have really nothing to do.
You got a severe hang up on that, don't you?
When something really looks shitty, I'm gonna point it out.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
Well, like, you know, it just had so many little things in it. It paid attention to detail. Like at the end, she created the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like that book, that is the cover of the book. That is the end image of the book. Like that was, she was flipping through it. That was the book.
You can't get more meta than that.
It was so meta. Like maybe that's the reason I was like, oh, this is so cool. Because like seeing those characters again too, doing their thing. Like, you know, the Vane, Ricky Gervais' voice actor, the Vane guy.
Yeah.
You know, the king and all that, seeing him just operating an elevator now for the business, all work for the businessman now. I loved all that stuff. It was like it was almost like fan service.
But it wasn't done like,
it wasn't ham-fisted or anything.
Like say Jurassic World or the Star Wars movies. They're like, oh, remember this? Oh, remember this? Oh, remember this?
It made sense.
It felt organic and more, it fit. You know?
Yeah, well, all the characters were doing things that made sense, right? Yeah. He does things for his subjects, so he's an elevator operator. He always wants praise, and he's very hung up on that, on getting recognition. Well, he's a public servant, he's a cop.
Yeah.
You know, like, it makes sense. All these characters kind of fit, so it's hard for me to, like, I'm glad you guys liked it as much as I did, because I wasn't sure how you guys were going to take that. Because again, it was one of those things where I did think it was underrated, but at the same time, you know, it's, I wonder if maybe it's just a love for the book that makes some people, that made me like it so much, and can make like people who saw it like it so much. That's why I reviewed pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Or if a general audience could appreciate it the same way. Yeah. So I was curious.
I mean, you always run the risk with any movie that could potentially be underrated, though, too, because, you know, you could think like, oh, this is super underrated, but it could just be special to you. And everybody would be like, fuck you.
This is what I was kind of thinking for a second. I was like, oh, man, like none of them know the book or anything. Maybe it is
that
just
too.
Maybe I just like it and I'm just fanboying out a little bit.
Well, I'm interested to read the book now to see how it compares.
Well, it's a children's book, so you're going to read it.
Something out of it.
You can get something out of it, but it reads like a children's book. It's very accessible.
Oh,
it's
fair
very
enough.
Simple. It's but it's simple.
Maybe I'll challenge myself
cool.
and read it in French.
Yeah, actually, that would be a much
interesting way.
Read a kid's
book in French. I think my vocabulary can handle
you could
that.
Easily, you could easily read the the French book. It would be an easy read for anybody who's like a beginner in French.
So me.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it was cool. Like I just had those moments where like he would say, would you please, and things like that. Would you please draw me a sheep, right? And things like that. And I was like, oh, it's from the book or whatever. It's like, he's saying it already. But that also made me kind of freak me out a little bit, because it also gave me, anybody who's ever played the game BioShock.
I was just about to say,
would you kindly? And I was like, it's ruined that for me now, though. Now every time I hear that, I think I'm being brainwashed or something. God
maybe,
damn it.
Maybe you are. That's why you like this movie. Andrew's just been swept up by, yes, I will draw the sheep. This movie's amazing.
Yes, that's right. Andrew Ryan is controlling me. I'm glad you guys all liked it so much. You know, it seems like Zach even liked it, even though
Get me wrong. Like, I like it and things like that. Obviously, I just had to bring stuff to the table because obviously I didn't like it as much as everybody else did. But
yeah.
I still do like the movie.
That's because you're too much of an adult.
Yeah, that's it. I was going to say, maybe I'm just too adult.
I was going to be a little nicer, actually, and I was going to say Zach's basically already a big kid. So,
yes, I can't relate.
So he's like, I can't learn anything from this.
Well, that's a good point.
He's already that adult that didn't grow up completely.
I made it.
You made it out the other side.
He is the aviator.
That's it. Yeah.
He makes, I believe that you'd have a sandwich in your pocket that you'd, that you'd just say nonsensical things. You
have
do
a plane
say
in
nonsensical
backyard,
things. Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Totally. Like, sure. Don't you think that that's within the realm of possibility for him?
Oh, I agree
with
that. Oh, for sure. I can see him like 50 years from now with the long
big beard.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And just go like, let's go for a drive. Do you have a license?
Dude, when he said, let's go for give you pancakes on your birthday, that was a Denny's thing. You love Denny's.
Oh, you know.
You go
it.
There for your birthday.
You know
he
it.
He is you.
More
you
than
are
once.
The aviator.
Yeah. Sure. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And then you can do all the other aviator roles. You can be Leo. You can do all.
Oh yeah,
stuff,
why not? And I could be afraid of germs. And yeah.
Yeah.
Before we devolve too far, I think that's a good place to end it. As Zach, as the aviator.
Sure.
Yeah. But I highly recommend this to anybody who missed it that year. I know it's not that old, but if you're at all interested in something kind of unique in that space and beautifully animated and just something that'll make you feel good by the end of it. Just a good feel good story with an actual message.
Yeah.
You can watch it with your kids. You can watch it yourself. It works great. So
watch it with your sheep.
I recommend it. And I guess, it's a pretty underrated movie. I guess we can all agree on that.
I think so.
Definitely.
I'm completely flabbergasted. This did not get nominated for anything. I'm like,
mm-hmm. I would take it over Inside Out any day, to be honest. I mean, I liked Inside Out, but
yeah.
I think this
I
was a lot
Inside
better.
Inside Out again to really, really give that. But yeah, no, this.
If this were an overrated podcast, I would put Inside Out on there.
Ooh. Yeah, I disagree with that.
That's one you could have said.
I disagree with that.
Oh, okay. I need to see it again because I wasn't overly gaga over it. It's funny enough, your opinion of this movie was my opinion to Inside Out.
Oh, okay.
Which was like, it was good. I enjoyed it, but everyone is going completely crazy over about
I love that movie.
I felt the same way as you did about Inside.
Yeah.
Where I was like, I enjoyed it. Like,
yeah, it
I'm saying, just because I'm saying it's overrated doesn't mean it's a bad movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah. No,
but I was just underwhelmed. I don't know.
Yeah. No. I have the feeling. Anyway, we're getting a little off topic.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
But so do you think it's underrated as well? Or
I mean, it's hard to say, right? Because like it did make, I guess, its budget, like, because it had
$20 million over.
But I mean, then you got to factor in advertising.
Yeah,
and all
so it's
that.
Pretty close.
So it's pretty much broke even.
Actually,
I guess.
Interestingly enough, it so right before it was, I forgot what the distributor who it was supposed to be, but right before it was supposed to release, the distributor inexplicably dropped it.
Oh. Okay.
And it was actually Netflix that ended up picking it up and releasing it, at least in North America, not in Canada. I don't know who did. Here
well,
it wasn't
it was,
on Netflix.
It was Entertainment.
Sorry, it was E1. Yeah,
E1. Yeah,
yeah. But in the Netflix is actually was the distributor for it that summer that it came out. I think it was like August of 2015. They put it out in the States, so it was like a Netflix original, not a Netflix original, but like had their banner and everything, and they put it out on
that's,
their service.
That's probably why it didn't get nominated, because in order to qualify for an Oscar nom, you have to be to have played in a. Either LA or New York for a week.
Yeah. Oh, well, it played festivals. I know that. It was at
that
Con.
It has
it was,
to
okay.
play from Sunday to Saturday all week to qualify before a certain day. That is the one requirement. So you see certain films that won't get
released. I don't know.
You see films in that come out, say, in January, full release, but they get a sneak peek release in December.
They
so
have
they can
to.
Qualify for the Oscars.
Yeah.
So I think that's one, because I don't know what, I guess I would have to see all the other films that were nominated that year, but I heard like The Good Dinosaur was kind of
Oh, it wasn't nominated, actually.
No.
When
Kubo
Marnie,
was, wasn't it?
No.
Or was
Kubo
it different
came
year?
Out the next year. It
oh,
was
right.
Boy in the World, Anomalisa, okay, Inside Out, When Marnie Was There, and Shaun the Sheep.
I like all those though, too.
I've only seen Inside Out, so
they're all pretty solid. I thought Anomalisa was another one that I enjoyed, but I thought this was better.
I thought Anomalisa was really good. That was another unique animated film that was really cool.
It was so lifelike too. Holy crap!
Yeah, like, just well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Well, that one's a super adult.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but like I don't know, like it could. I think it could have edged out a few of those movies. To be honest, I didn't see Boy in the World. So that was the one I didn't see. But you know, I think it could have edged out a few of them. I don't know about the nomination thing, just because it did have a run here in Canada, at least in the theater.
That doesn't count. It has to be in the US.
So I'm wondering, LA or New York.
But if it had a run here, I'm not. It should have had a run in the States. I just don't know. I don't know.
But can. Canadians, you know, like that French material.
Dude, it didn't last year either. It was only in theaters for like a week or two, a couple weeks or something.
Like I said, I'd never heard of this until today. I didn't hear it until I mentioned it. I was like, I've never heard of it.
Oh, Little Prince?
Well, you'd heard of the
No, I didn't know.
I had heard of it, but I didn't hear anything.
Well, I knew the movie, but... Canadian story with the redhead girl.
Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. So you need some Canadian like literature.
I need to read a bunch of children's books. You know? Give me all the famous ones because I am so,
Green Eggs and Ham, man.
That's all I had.
You only have Green Eggs and Ham.
No, I had Dr. Seuss. I had Magic School Bus and a few other things, but that's it. I didn't really have a big variety of a lot of different famous children books.
Loch Ness Monster.
Goosebumps.
Yeah. Goosebumps?
Oh, I read Goosebumps.
Yeah, did you see that Goosebumps movie? What an adaptation.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good, you know, and she finds the creepy guy next door.
You're starting it, right, Zach? You're starting that movie, right?
Yeah. I'm R.L. Stein.
Yeah.
I hate Stephen King. Yeah. I don't actually.
But yeah, I'm glad to hear you guys did at least enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. And that... you know, that this one, I'm glad it got its recognition because I was like just bugging people to watch this movie for so long. I was just like, hey, you should go see this. You should go. And everybody's just kind of, because I don't think they had any reason to see it, right? No, unless besides me telling them.
So. Which is like, what is it? Like, that's.
Yeah, like The Little Prince, that sounds weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? Right. So, it's just another kid movie, isn't it? Right.
In a prequel to Purple Rain.
Yeah, you know, is it Prince? Like,
go to bed. Oh,
early Prince? Is that
early
what you
Prince?
Mean?
Yeah.
Origin story.
Yeah, that's what we need.
All right.
Yeah, this is the G version of Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so to next week where we have Alex hosting next time with his movie, which we will find out unless you know already.
I do, but we'll find out.
We'll surprise everyone.
Oh, I want to know. I already do know, so you won't know.
Well, whatever. Until next time, take it easy.